Brainiac, I presume.
I apologize for any discomfort, but it was important that I accurately gauge your powers.
Why? Morbid curiosity?
Curiosity, yes. Morbid, hardly. You see, we have more in common than you can possibly know, Kal-El.
How do you know my name? Have you been to Krypton?
I am Krypton.
And now, another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Krypton Academy. This is the show where we talk about Superman. I'm your host, DJ Wooldridge. With me, as always, is Sal. Hey, Sal.
Hey.
Oh, my goodness. And if you're not watching live, which is a higher tier than the normal audio tier, you missed out on conversations about Alien Earth and the Batman 2. Don't want to miss out on those. So, you know, maybe check out the live tier. You can watch Rox and I do that show live as well. It's a bunch of cool stuff. Don't miss out. But we're talking about Superman. We're in Superman the Animated Series. We're now hip deep in introducing his core rogues. This is the sweet spot for a lot of animated series. Like, here's the introduction to all the big dogs that we're going to keep coming back to later. And we're going to start up with, I would argue, probably one of Superman's most iconic villains outside of the big three.
Yes.
And I think the big three, Sal, I'm interested to know your thoughts on this. I would say Superman's big three are Lex, Brainiac, and Zod.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Does that seem right to you, or would you have a different big three?
I mean, I would not have picked Zod. I appreciate that Zod's in the movies, but I never think of Zod. Like, I literally never think of Zod when I think of Superman's rogues. I think of terrestrial villains. Honestly, I think most people would put Doomsday in the top three.
Oh, God damn it. You're fucking right.
Even though he only really has one good story, and it's the one where he kills Superman and dies.
Yeah.
I think he's the biggest. I think it's Lex. I think it's Doomsday. And then it's a pitch hitter. It's either Brainiac or Metallo or it's whoever you want as like a big fun villain. But you know, pre Doomsday, it was Lex, Brainiac, and Metallo.
Yeah. That's such an interesting point to make. That a lot of when you talk about like villains, characters' most prominent villains, it is who has the market share of attention. Because like, of course, I've always thought of Zod because he's the villain of the second Superman movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, Zod's always been, to the degree that we're going to get to it soon, where, like, this movie has a Kryptonian villain that's not Zod, and it's like, just make it Zod. Like,
what are you doing? And I'll bet it's a movie thing. I bet they were like, you can't use Zod.
You can't use him, and then it took forever for them to introduce in the comics, and it's like, this is crazy. Zod's one of the main guys. Although I will say, I also am a big believer that you hold on to Zod. You don't open with Zod. You establish Superman, and then you're like, but what if an evil one? Now you've got a problem on your hands. You save that for movie three, in my opinion. But whatever.
That's why Venom works, because you waited like what 30 years before you introduced an evil Spider-Man.
You gotta hold on. You're not your first. I bet you Avi Arad would disagree with me, but your first new Spider-Man movie is an event.
Also would say that.
yeah. It's not Venom. You don't intro with Venom. You hold on to Venom. You hold on to your auntie. And again, I'm a sucker for. I'm a little burned out on it now because of how many Marvel movies have done the evil version of whatever.
Oh my god!
But I know growing up, who's my favorite Doctor Who villain? The Master. Why? Because he's the evil Doctor. I'm a sucker for that shit. I love it. The one exception being, and I think because visually so distinctive, is Red Skull. Yeah, you open with Red Skull's the first cap villain.
Sure,
obviously.
Yeah. Well, that also, then you don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah. You gotta lead with Red Skull, but otherwise, you know. Anyway, I do understand the instinct of holding off on Mandarin because he is so, you got to do some legwork to like justify Mandarin, which
I think
movies
what's
never
so
did.
Frustrating is how well they did it. Like how Iron Man 3's marketing was like, this is the Mandarin.
Yeah.
He is Al-Qaeda scare character.
Yeah.
And then they went, nah. And I'm like, you built up so much good faith. Like, their idea that they pitched was better than the thing they did. And they've never been able to fix it.
It would be like my example. And it's aged a little bit better because the idea of creating a scare villain just to distract people.
It's a good idea.
Is very pertinent. It's very like timely and pertinent, timely then, timely now.
Yes.
But to Sal's point, especially since he's the main one, it'd be like if in The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger's run around with his Joker and then you reveal like, who was the guy, who was the Chinese guy that ran off with the money to China?
Oh, if God.
If you revealed like, actually he was the villain the whole time, you're like, why?
that would be a really big mistake.
Why?
That they would try, because yeah, it's such a stupid idea.
And the other thing, God, I can't believe we're getting off on Iron Man, but my other, and I actually like Iron Man 3. I actually think Iron Man 3 is a solid movie.
I've come around on it, but.
Yeah, same. I've come around on it. The molten bad guys are weird, but whatever. Anyway, yeah. But the other issue is with Mandarin's backstory is that he made his rings out of the heart of a dragon. This Iron Man 3 is coming off of the heels of Avengers, which had flying dragon aliens in it. Just say he made the rings with Chitauri tech. It's right there. It ties into Iron Man's crisis of consciousness. He's got PTSD from the events of Avengers. He's got to face a villain that's using the tech of the Chitauri. It's all right there,
man. Now let's
say
that for Spider-Man.
Oh my God.
Let's
anyway.
Have him be a Spider-Man villain that does exactly that idea.
Yeah, geez Louise. Anyway, this episode is we're talking about Superman, not Iron Man. Although we could, let us know if you want us to.
Yeah, three movies.
And then this is season 1, episode 7, The Way of All Flesh. You know, kind of a little pretentious, but I appreciate the ambitions of this show. This originally aired on October 19th, 1996. Sal, do you have a synopsis for us?
Oh, yeah. John Corbin returns as a kryptonite-powered cyborg, eager to kill Superman. They made a mistake in this one, I think, not in this description, but in this episode in general.
Yeah.
With Corbin, where they assume I remember him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I appreciate that, like, yes, he's Metallo. Yes, he's played by Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah.
That does a lot. But also, I don't know. They were like, oh, remember? And they kept showing you, like, the mech he's in. I'm like, yeah, I don't remember what Superman does with him.
Yeah, yeah, well, to the degree that when you and I were watching the episode, we were like, oh, wait, I thought Superman hurt him in that, and that's why he became Metallo. Nope.
Yeah. No,
he's just a guy.
He's just slightly embarrassed.
Well, and it's tough, too, because, and this is how you introduce Metallo. I do agree with this. He should just be a henchman that then becomes Metallo. Like, you introduce him as John Corbin first and then establish Metallo.
Yeah,
which they do.
You two-face him.
But what differentiates him from Jetpack Guy in... in the Kryptonite episode, like,
yeah, what villain is he?
Yeah, and that's true, you know, and maybe that's what they should have done, is like Corbin is in the mech guy, then Corbin's jetpack guy. Corbin keeps popping up, which is what they did with Rhino and Sandman in Spectacular Spider-Man. They kept being guys that then once they turned them into villains, it made sense. John Corbin and his James Coburn ass face is living the high life behind bars. If our younger audience members don't know who James Coburn is, look up James Coburn specifically from The Great Escape. That's exactly what John Corbin looks like. And except he's blonde. John Corbin's blonde. And he's living the high life behind bars. He's got paintings and food and everything. And this is pretty solid writing, because what it presents itself as is an introduction to the idea that John Corbin is connected to Lex Luthor, and that's how he's doing so well behind bars. But what it also does sneakily is it lets you know this is a guy that likes his carnal pleasures. This is a guy that enjoys tasting things and touching things and looking at things to establish the real fucking hellscape he finds himself in later. So he keels over. He's sick with a virus that's presumably fatal. It was a little weird. Like, you're not going to make it. It needs to be a virus because of what we reveal later.
Yep.
But it's kind of like this doesn't feel like how viruses work.
No, it's cancer. Like,
yeah, it's cancer or some other degenerative. Like, no, you've got an extra little hole in your heart that's killing you or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the doctor shares that the prison doctor also has a mutual friend that also rhymes with Bex Boother. There's a surface-to-air missile strike on the prison, because this is a Superman show. We're not being subtle over here.
No.
Superman stops the last missile and captures some of the inmates that escape. Corbin, however, in the distraction, escapes underwater.
Clever.
And with the whole diving suit ever. And because, once again, because this is a kid's cartoon and we need to, it should have been Mercy, but that would require the kids at home to remember who Mercy is. Instead of the person that pulls Corbin out of the water is the doctor. And I'm like, that's
like, wasn't he just on the island?
Yeah. Why is he the guy? You don't have a guy. This should be Mercy, but then we'd have to remind kids who Mercy is. But if this were an adult show, it'd be Mercy Graves. And we'd be like, 100%. Oh yeah, got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. So We're introduced to the metal endoskeleton that will be Metallo. It's Terminator. We're turning Corbin into a Terminator.
He looks exactly like a Terminator, and they're like, it's 1996. People still remember this stuff. They love it. And you know what? They're right.
Yeah, because it wasn't awesome. It was the post-crisis. Metallo's just a Terminator now.
Yeah.
And now, in between the two of them, they were probably feeding off of the original Terminator. Now we have Terminator 2 either coming out or having just come out.
Yep.
That it's like, Terminator's as big as it's ever been.
He looks great. Terminator. Go for it.
And also, you want to see Superman fight a Terminator with a kryptonite heart? Of course you do. Here you go.
That's what I'm here for. Are you kidding me?
So, Lois at the Daily Planet, we cut to the Daily Planet. Lois is pondering out loud. She's like, the thing I want to know about is who has access to surface-to-air missiles. And Clark says the insane thing of, like, nowadays, everybody. And I'm like, I'm sorry,
like
fucking
you?
What?
Jimmy?
I think the implication is anybody with enough money can have surface-to-air missiles, but that's not how you phrase.
Another pass on that dialogue. It's a little weird.
Yeah, it's not. This isn't the Spider-Man cartoon where everybody's running around with these toyetic, colorful tanks. Like,
every mugger has a laser pistol.
Oh my god, that's another small detail that I don't know how they got it past the censors. I don't know, but they keep from Batman animated series. Bad guys use guns. They sound like guns. They are guns.
Yeah.
It's just wild.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, because, you know, Batman is coming out of the exact same as Spider-Man. Spider-Man is just, like, every single note you have, they are incorporating into it. Like, oh, does he have to punch? Oh, does he have to say kill? Oh, does he have to shoot a gun? Everything's changed. Batman the animated series, everything else. Like, I remember them talking about how they were like, oh, we weren't allowed to have, like, defenestration. We're not allowed to have strangulation. We weren't allowed to be, like, overtly sexual and stuff. And I'm like, first of all, what are you doing? What show are you trying to make?
Yes.
Secondly, you got away with a lot of those things. And the second that the animation style changed, you got to do all those things.
Yeah, you got to do so much more. And again, I go back to, like, I just rewatched Batman Beyond, like, a couple of years ago. And it's like, this is insane. And I think then especially, they're trying to chase that Buffy audience.
Yes.
So they're pushing it even more, which is always... X-Men Evolution also chased the Buffy audience. It's like, that's not how things work. That's not how things...
Yeah, I don't understand that. It's odd, but they did it. I think Warner Brothers just paid them off.
Well, I wonder if it's Warner Brothers paid them off, or this introduced an interesting idea. You know, the way you're talking, the way I always assumed is, I assumed it was network notes. And now I'm wondering if it's more... studio, like Warner Brothers, like, no, that's fine, I guess. Whereas Marvel is like, you know, fucking Ike Perlmutter and Avi Arad are like, no, you can't. We're selling toys to children.
That would not surprise me in the least if it was an Avi Arad Perlmutter thing where they were like, whoa, this show is. Because I could, like, did you see that quote from George Lucas where he apparently came out when he was talking to Ron Howard about Solo? Yeah.
It's like,
don't forget
this
for 12-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Like, I could imagine Avi Arad being like, whoa, don't forget, this show is for 6-year-olds.
Yep.
Like, skewing way lower than who was actually watching that show.
Absolutely, yeah, because it's like, I'm reading that book, MCU, which is kind of the behind-the-scenes story of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Some wild stories about Avi Arad and Ike Perlmutter.
I would love to know. I suspect a lot.
Yeah. It's a good book. I recommend it. For people that... you know, like the things that we like. It's a good book.
Sure.
So this metal is made, this endoskeleton is made from an indestructible metal called, you guessed it, Metallo. And then back to the Daily Planet, yada, yada. At the Lex Labs, we start testing Corbin in his new body. And they spend some fucking money on this animation. Because the scene, I know it's small things, but like there's a scene where it's actually a cool scene too. He, like, tests your punching strength on this thing, and he punches it, and it's off the charts. And he's like, I wasn't even trying. And then he does a second one that wrecks the machine. And it's like, God damn, that looked... just him punching the machine looked beautiful.
Yeah,
like, why are you spending so much money
fluid
on this?
Yeah, I know.
it's so fun where you see, like, most of this show looks great, but then you can really, like, oh, we're dropping some money on our Metallo episode. Punches the shit out of the machine. There's another thing later that I'll get to that looks great. Corbin's fake skin is also made out of Metallo, which is a little weird. And he realizes he can't feel anything.
Yep.
Lex tells him, hey, This is just, we'll adjust it later. There will be an adjustment later. We'll get back to that, because that leads to one of the coldest lines in this entire fucking show that I did not remember. So here's the other thing that looks great. To get Superman's attention, Corbin just plants himself in front of a train, and the train wreck is also like, wow, this is like movie level shit.
Yeah, it looks like the first episodes, like and it's like, this is the phenomenon we experienced when we were making Batman the Animated Series, where it was like, some episodes I'm like, this is a great looking episode, I'm really happy about it. Some episodes I'm like, no show has ever or will ever look like this episode.
Yes. Yep.
And it's funny because then, like, there was also the second tier, which was also, by the standards of the of anything coming out then or now, incredible.
Yeah.
And while the studio that made the show I'm describing, like Leather Wings, Feet of Clay, Part Two, or Heart of Ice, will bankrupt itself making a show that doesn't look like anything else.
Yeah.
The second tier, that'll be what they make like Batman the Mask of the Phantasm movie from. And it still is amazing.
Yeah.
Nothing will ever look like that one thing where, like, there's that beautiful close up of Batman like cracking his knuckles and he's enveloped in shadow and his like there's this softness to his gloves, and I'm like, that phenomenon of like watching, I remember watching Batman the Animated Series when it came out, as it came out. And I was like, and episodes where I'm like, and I'm like, oh, it's one of these. You
know? Yeah.
Like the episode with like the Underdwellers had that team on it. And I'm like, oh, this episode that sucks.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with anything. It's an anti-gun episode.
Yep.
But it's like, whoa, it's beautiful. The alligators look amazing. Yeah. And then the next episode, like, I got a Batman in my basement, where I'm like, this looks kind of like ass.
Yeah. Especially
Superman does the exact same thing, where it's like some episodes I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
And then other episodes I'm like the next one.
Yeah. Which is weird, because you'd think you'd blow your money on Brainiac, but for some reason they decided Metallo is the one.
And Metallo. I hate it, man. I think it's because they don't know. I think it's because you don't know which studio is going to get them.
Oh, that's a good point. That's an interesting point. But for whatever reason, man, this episode like fucking rips.
It rips.
For animation, it's like killing it.
Yep.
So Superman shows up, he starts going toe-to-toe with Corbin, who's almost as strong anyway, and then he reveals he has a kryptonite heart.
Now
we get another... This is the third episode in a row where one of Superman's co-workers has to come save him. Lois drives up to save Superman, and Corbin forces... This is kind of gross. He forces a kiss on Lois. He can't feel anything. That's where we're really driving that home. And then Superman drives Lois's car into Corbin, which is cool.
Yep. He's like, sorry about your car, but I had to kill that guy.
I had to get that guy off the playing field. I have in my notes, Superman's normal suit should just be made of lead at this point.
I don't know about that. That sounds like a problem.
It's definitely a problem for everybody else.
Metropolis
has lead poisoning now because Superman keeps running around. So this is what I was talking about earlier. I did not remember how... I remember the broad strokes of this. Metallo can't feel. It drives him insane.
Yeah.
I didn't remember how fucking cold this line is. So Metallo goes to the scientist. We established there's a scientist earlier that made him Metallo. If you're watching live, say hi to the cat in the background.
Yes.
Then Metallo goes to the scientist, and he's like, I want those adjustments now. And the scientist is like, what adjustments? He's like, Lex promised adjustments. He's like, oh no, you were going to adjust to this. And I'm like, oh my fucking God, man. That is so fucking cold. If I were Metallo, I'd fucking wreck shit. I'd be like, fuck you all.
Right? Yeah, no, I love that. No, you're supposed to make the adjustments.
Yeah, like, it's going to be in your mind. You're going to get used to it. Fuck
what?
You, I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Also, everyone really signs him up for it. It's, you know, they're like, oh, you're, he's like, I haven't eaten anything or drank anything. And like, since I got the operation, oh, you don't need to eat. You're the old eat justice and you'll drink vengeance.
Exactly.
And he's like, yeah, okay. But like, what?
You guys understand that before this, I was a hedonistic mercenary, right?
If you take away the reason I do this job.
Yeah.
Doesn't this stand a reason I would never want to do this job again?
Yeah. And also, I don't have a problem hurting any of you. I don't
right?
care about
now
that.
Now I'm an unkillable Terminator.
Yeah. Oh,
you better
man.
Lie to me or I'm going to kill you.
That would have been an interesting turn. We kind of do it, but we don't really commit to it. The idea of, like, if the episode turns and now it's Superman has to fight Metallo to save all these people from Metallo. It's
yes,
not like Superman's
that's
after.
The movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you could make a Metallo. You 100% could. I think we've gotten in our head that Superman needs to be kind of like this epic, mythic thing, which, even though I did kind of miss a little bit of the mythic in James Gunn's Superman, I'm kind of glad that he didn't feel that need as much.
Yeah.
But I feel like that impulse is why they always feel the need to be like, it needs to be Zod,
huge.
Or it needs to be, you know what I mean? It's like, no, a guy that's lost his mind because he's a murder robot now, that's a perfectly fine thing for
yeah.
Superman to punch. That's okay.
Yeah, he beats Toyman in the first 10 minutes. And
yeah.
then mm-hmm. he fights, and Toy Man's like, you know, and of course everything's linked to Lex, and
yeah.
You know, Toy Man is one of those people, and that establishes the, you know, and Metallo's one of those guys. It's,
yeah,
it's
or
it.
You set up the, you know, you set up Metallo, and part of the reason where the Metallo tech comes from is Lex is communicating with Brainiac, and then
yes.
Brainiac uses Metallo's body to be his body. There's a billion different ways that you could crack this code. It's
yeah.
not, but we just don't. We just
nope.
don't. Okay, so Corbin pulls his fake skin off. We really like to lean into the body horror on this show.
Yep.
He's like a walking nightmare the rest of the episode.
I like that he's like, do you like my new outfit? I'm like, it seems a little rushed.
Yeah. You might want to do some
workshop.
A little
it.
Extra
Half your
work
shirt
on
is gone.
It a little bit. So Lois and Clark explore the prison doctor's office. Lois is starting to play around on a sharp box, which Clark has to explain to her what that is.
Well, he needs to explain to the audience what that is, and so we need to have our ace reporter not know what that is.
Yep. It would have made more sense if it was Jimmy. Like, what if I stick my hand in here, Clark?
Don't do it,
Jimmy. Don't do it, Jim. He x-rays it, and fortunately for him, the poison, the virus is just sitting right there
yeah.
to be found. Meanwhile, Lois finds that the doctor has validated parking from LexCorp. Should have done a little bit more work. Oh, you know what? Actually, the doctor did need to do more work. Lex cleaned up. We find out later off camera, Lex cleaned up that problem.
Oh, yeah.
Corbin ruins. Lex is having a yacht date, which Corbin shows up to ruin. The writing on the show, man, for the time and everything's really good because he's. Lex is sitting there with this opulent meal with his date that's in a bikini, and Corbin's like, I can't taste, I can't feel, and he looks at the woman and he's like, I can't, and then we move on. I'm like, as an adult now, I'm like, I know what he's talking about.
I know what he's talking about. I also like that Lex has a nautical outfit.
Yes.
It's like, well, I'm going on the open ocean, I have to dress like a sea captain.
Yep. Yeah, a little bit of that from the original 78 Superman, a little bit of that Gene Hackman. I got costumes.
Yeah.
I got outfits.
Right? I love it.
So, yeah, and then they take him out. I guess Lex, who knows if this is true or not. He's like, I want to take you out to the open ocean where I have a secret lab that can fix you up.
Are you going to kill him?
Yeah. Dude, how?
Yeah, that's true.
You really should have put a kill switch on that guy.
Yeah, what?
Yeah. So Superman confronts them. Lex implies that he had the doctor killed, which is fucking wild.
Yeah.
Superman, this again, man, the animation on this episode. So he's fighting Corbin. He's keeping his distance. The ship that you get off, the little boat you get off in case the ship
dinghy?
Sinks. But you know what I mean? Like the.
A lifeboat.
There's a little lifeboat that he. And on paper, it's like, I don't give a shit. When I'm thinking about Superman, like him throwing a lifeboat at a guy, whatever. The way this thing's fucking animated, because we're like on the quote-unquote cameras on the boat as it hurtles towards.
Oh, I know!
Metallo's heart. I'm like, this fucking rips. This is cool.
Yeah. What? Yeah. The A-team is working on this one.
Yeah. So he throws the lifeboat at Metallo. He goes deeper in the boat. They fucking fight. And then Corbin now reveals that not only does he have a kryptonite heart, he can shoot a kryptonite laser beam out of it. Superman's got his hands full with Metallo.
That beam kind of comes out of nowhere, but I do appreciate the third act switcheroo where it's like, here's a laser beam too.
Yeah, fuck it, why not? We love robots shoot lasers, sure. How does kryptonite make a beam?
It just shoots out of the rock. Like,
yeah.
There must be like a laser behind it, and it no.
No, who cares? Logistics of the laser beam are a little iffy.
Yeah.
Corbin, Superman, it's Metallo, Superman's number, but then he's like, hey, dude, I brought the virus with me to show you for reasons. And then Corbin takes the virus to go give to Lex. And Lex is, dude, he's doing the classic thing of like a kid, you're trying to feed him food and they don't want it. He's like,
you gave him the virus. That's not, you didn't switch it out?
Yeah. He gave him the virus. And also, the virus is like splashing all over Lex's face. I know. Like, Lex has that virus. That
virus now.
It's not like poison. I don't think you need to ingest it for it to. I think it's splashing in your face is enough, but whatever, yeah. Man. I'm not a virologist. I'm not Anthony Fauci. So while that's happening, Superman, again, man, Superman with his wild gambits. Like, Superman really wants to play it close to the line, see how far he can get, how far he can push it, because he's like, all right, so Metallo's splashing this deadly virus in Lex's face, and I'm in hip deep in oil. What if I just ignited this?
Yeah, what
gasoline?
If I just set the whole goddamn yacht on fire?
To what end? Unclear. So he just blows up the boat. Metallo sinks because he's made of fucking metal.
Yeah.
And then a shark shows up and Superman saves Lex. Fuck yeah. Metallo, I guess. We're just going to leave him.
Big time. I love that that coldness of Lex where he's just like, bye. Like, he's in the ocean. Mm-hmm. His yacht is sinking. His enemy is the only salvation he has. And he's like, yeah, but you're going to sink to the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just always great. This episode in particular reminded me that Clancy Brown is so great in everything. And then he was awesome. Such an inspired choice for Lex.
I'm glad he's kind of getting a little bit of resurgence. He was in John Wick 4. Obviously, he was in The Penguin. Because it's one of those things, every time he shows up, it's like, man, you're the fucking best, dude.
I know. You're so great and you deserve it. You're not. I don't want you to go like the Ron Perlman route. Or it's like, Ron Perlman never really got justice for like being a fantastic character actor.
Yeah.
Like, he got to be Hellboy. And that's great. Like, I'm sure he got paid.
You know? Yeah, and he got that. He had that whole Sons of Anarchy run, and I'm sure that did well. But it's like, if you're like Sal and I, and you didn't watch, I'm assuming it sounds like he didn't watch Sons of Anarchy.
No,
did I.
I didn't watch. Surprisingly enough, I didn't watch Duck Dynasty either.
Yeah. But you're right. And Ron Perlman's one of those. I want to say he showed up in an episode of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and you're 100% right. It's like, same with Powers Booth. I just watched Deadwood. Powers Booth is in that. And it's
Powers
like, Booth's fuck,
amazing.
These
well,
guys are great, man. These fucking guys that this show pulled, so good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. They're all in the Justice League.
Yeah.
Cartoon.
Yeah.
And they all come back. You know, that's the thing, is that, like, Ron Perlman was Clayface. Mm-hmm. And so every, like, I want to say two episodes out of the entire run of Justice League, they're like, let's put Clayface in there.
Yeah.
And Ron Perlman showed up.
Well, and then if you want to go further, Ron Perlman voiced Slade, a.k.a. Deathstroke,
in
Teen Titans, and he's great.
He's
in
amazing.
That.
He disappears in that role. He's completely like somebody else.
To the degree that it's one of those, like, I get we couldn't call him Deathstroke and we call him Slade, and I get, like, technically, the Roy Harper in Teen Titans has the same design as the Roy Harper in Justice League Unlimited, but it's like, can we get Kevin Conroy's Batman fighting
Deathstroke, like this guy,
Ron Perlman, like, Slade. Like, can we? Come on, man! Like, that'd be pretty cool. To the degree that I think they did a continuation comic where, like, here's the Deathstroke of the animated series. I'm like, no, it should be Slade. It should be the Teen Titans one. He was pretty cool.
Yeah, anyway. There's nothing to not link those shows. Please do it.
It gets a little weird with the Robins, I think.
Yes.
But like, who gives a shit? Like, who cares?
Yeah, no, because Robin is like, because Robin's like 19 in the first episode that he appears in the animated series.
Yeah, he's like 19, and I guess his costume is already Tim Drake coded. But I remember watching Teen Titans thinking that was Tim Drake, and then I'm like, no, it's Dick Grayson. And so that could be a little weird. But again, who gives a shit? Like, just connect them. It's all connected.
Put them in at least one episode of Justice League Unlimited, which
that
would have
been so cool.
But
bring all those voice actors back for one episode and be like, and do it in that style. I get the styles are different, but do it in that style. And you're like, it's all connected, and you're like, how? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't care.
Because also the Flash in Unlimited is, I'm saying Unlimited, the entire Justice League is Wally. Wally shows up in Teen Titans. You could just be like, yeah, he was Kid Flash. Now he's Flash.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Oh, Tea Time reminded me that Perlman also plays Orion in the
Justice
League.
Right. Also great there.
That's a like no brainer. Like, yeah,
yes.
Make him Orion.
Okay, so I'm getting way ahead of myself, but in my heart, I think, I know it's Krypton Academy, which is Superman specific, but in my heart, I'm like, well, maybe we could just roll into Justice League. We could just start doing Justice League.
Right, Superman's on that. He's in every episode. It's fine.
He's in the intro of every episode. But there's this one episode on Unlimited that's Orion, Batman, and Flash. That's one of my all-time favorites.
Episode. That's great.
Yeah, it's a great, great episode. One of my favorite Flash moments where he runs into, what is it? Trickster. And he's like, are you on your meds? Flash is like, are you on your meds? It's like, this is great. This is a good.
Yeah. And Orion being there, what about your enemy? And he's like, right. Hey, turn yourself in when you're done with your drink. You got me again, Flash.
Yeah, it's a great, it's such a good, we are lucky.
Yeah.
That we had this, that we had Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, Justice League. I sometimes forget what a gift it was to fans of these characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, voice acting, great. Corbin's voice actor, awesome as well. Malcolm McDowell, already mentioned, but great in this. He ends up in the bottom of the ocean. Lex is like, Metallica could still be around. You should be worried. And Superman's like, I don't think I'm the one that should be worried. And it's like, yeah, but why are you leaving him on the bottom of the ocean?
Right? You could just go down there direct, like, just follow him.
Yeah, and that, but that last shot is pretty cool of Metallica. And it, again, it's an expertly animated because he's not clear. He's way off in the distance, and all you see is the glow, the shape, the silhouette, and the glow of the heart. And it's like, that's effective. That's effective.
It's great. It's the same ending as the as the Riddler episode, which is hilarious. Like, I mean, more or less, it's the same. It has the same like vibe. The first Riddler episode, Riddler wants to kill his boss, tries to kill his boss, doesn't. His boss like fires Riddler, makes a huge amount of money off of Riddler's designs and video game or whatever. And Batman and Bruce and Dick are at home, and they're just like, you know, that jerk got away, even though the jerk that Riddler tried to kill. I mean, you know, he and Batman's like, yeah, but he'll never sleep soundly again.
Mm-hmm.
And then shows him like locking all of his doors and like going to sleep with a shotgun in his hands. And it's like, that should be how they wanted Lex to end. Like, they wanted that episode to end.
That's a great reminder of, that's a really good episode to end to an episode that I don't care. Like, Riddler is game designer. It's like, well, the 90s, I guess.
Yeah, 100%.
He said, makes video games? Sure, whatever.
He makes all kinds of games.
yeah. But you're right. The ending of that is actually really... We're not going to cover Batman the Animated Series. The show that inspired these shows already did it. I've made a commitment. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
But it is a good show. It is a very good show. It is very good. But we're talking about... Now, because we're going to talk about Season 1, Episode 8, Stolen Memories, which originally aired on November 2nd, 1996. Sal, what is the synopsis for Stolen Memories?
Brainiac, once Krypton's all-knowing planetary computer, comes to Earth as part of his information-gathering trek across the galaxy. But, as Superman discovers, Brainiac's intent after gathering the world's knowledge is to destroy the Earth.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right?
That's correct. Yeah. So... talking about voice casting, Corey Burton is Brainiac. Fantastic. We open with Lois and Jimmy. And this is I like the creators on the show are smart about the visual shorthand they use and the stuff they reference. So even though we live in a world where Superman is an alien, like our core concept is our main character is an alien.
Yeah.
This is our first introduction to another alien character. And so Lois and Jimmy are visiting a site that very much evokes Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Every yes. alien encounter, Area 51, it's the desert. You've got people in like hazmat suits and beep, 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 boops and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a very, being able to, and it's something that I wish more the movies that adapt these characters pulled from when making the movies is the short, like all of Man of Steel is essentially supposed to be, they wanted it to be a first contact story. None of it succinctly captures that vibe as this show does within like the first minute of this episode. Like, hey, you know, first contact, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Brainiac shows up. He's meeting with Lex Luthor. He beams Lex Luthor up. Meanwhile, Superman returns from 5 light years out, which is fucking wild. And if it appears to be a retooled version of the ship he came in. They are now making it his little, you can go to Toy Biz and buy the toy of his little rocket ship that he's able to fly around in with his little space suit, his Superman space suit, which looks cool. I do like the white with the red logo on it. It looks cool.
Yeah.
the Pentagon calls both Superman and Lex, and again, we get a whole meeting about what to do. We're using the visual language of these first encounter movies. We're at the Pentagon. Superman's there. Lex is there. And they're debating about what should we do with Brainiac? And Lex is like, Superman should go meet him.
Yeah.
You're both aliens. Go hang out.
I like that. I really like... The animation is not great. And
yeah.
But I really like the enemy of my enemy kind of story.
Yep. We do get one. There's one standout animation bit in this episode that we'll get to later. But Sal's 100% right. It's like the money went to the Metallo episode. Which, as cool as Metallo is, you'd think you'd spend that money on... I guess there's more action beats in the Metallo episode. Like big action moments than this one. Yeah. But Brainiac's your big guy. Brainiac's, for people that know the history of this show and Justice League, Brainiac's a big fucking deal in this series. So Brainiac, he shows up. Superman shows up at Brainiac's ship, and he's immediately attacked by drones because we're 6 minutes into the episode and we need an action beat.
Yeah, the drones thing was just like, we need an action scene. People have been talking for too long.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. It feels so superfluous, and they give the classic justification, like, sorry, Superman, I just needed to... test your abilities. Sure. Watch a newsreel. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
So, and while Superman's on the ship, he finds Kryptonian writing. He asks Brainiac, how do you know about Krypton? And Brainiac says, I am Krypton. Ooh.
Good line.
Yeah, it's a good line. So Brainiac shows Superman all his balls. He has the room of glowing balls. And
suggestive episodes. Yeah. This is massively tragic.
Yeah, it really is. And so he shows Superman his balls. He's like, hey, man, touch this ball. Touch my balls. And he says, he calls them the twin sons of Krypton. He says, we're both orphans of Krypton. And he shows him one of his balls. And it's basically the first episode, the destruction of Krypton.
Yeah.
And even weirdly, he even has a moment where like Jor-El turns and looks at Clark and is like, Kal-El, and it's like, whoa, fucking wild.
Yeah, and also like, why?
It's never explained. I presume that the balls are basically supposed to be a modernization of the Shrunken Cities functionally. It's their knowledge stored down. Brainiac's like, hey, you and I should team up because we're both Krypton babies. I just want to point out again, they should have just taken this for Man of Steel. Like, taking the first three episodes of this show and this episode, don't do Zod, do Brainiac. It's the same story you're trying to tell, but better with a villain we haven't seen. Just do that. do that. man. So Superman goes back home to like sleep on it, and he has this like dream/vision. About what, this even more so is like everything that like clips from the first episode.
Yeah.
Which is what, like one of those, like, where is this coming from? It's implied later that it's a delayed reaction from him touching the orb. Did Brainiac not know that was going to happen?
Or did he? Like, I thought it was on purpose. Like, I thought he tried to do that so that, like, it would addle Superman, or it would entice Superman to make him want to help him.
To know that you let his home planet die? Like, yeah, it's such
that,
a weird...
But like, just the touching of the thing. I don't know if he expected, like... It's weird.
Yeah, that's the part. Like, I understand. Like, him wanting to see, like, hey, join me, because Krypton, you can have Krypton's knowledge. But this, like, after effect, does he not know what happens when...
There's no way he knows. I mean, he is a robot. Yeah. He can't interact with it in the same way. But it's It's unclear, and they don't deal with it.
Yeah. So Superman goes to tell Lex, like, hey, I don't trust this Brainiac dude. And Lex is like, bitch, I don't trust anybody. I had missiles on it from day one.
It's kind of funny. I really like that a lot.
Yeah. And then Lex starts downloading data from Brainiac, which, of course, Brainiac fucking hijacks.
Yeah, and also, like, what data are you getting? Like,
it's such
like,
a weird...
Oh, anti-gravity rays, right? Like, he lists the general off the ground.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, he's like, well, check this shit out.
Imagine what else we could get. And I'm like, this is like one step above the water-powered jetpack we've had for the last 20 years.
Exactly. Oh, and it's so funny, too. This is where, for as well-written as these shows are in the shorthand, this is where you kind of have to yada-yada stuff. Like, yeah, we're going to get Data from Brainiac, and then Brainiac immediately like takes over the transmission, obviously. And then they're like, oh no, he's going to be able to control the Pentagon or something. I'm like, fucking why? Like, what the fuck? Like, okay, the stakes just raised really quickly. So while Brainiac is distracted by... And then they go to like launch the missiles at Brainiac, but he's already controlling the system. While all this is going on, Superman goes back to Brainiac's balls and starts touching all his balls.
Yep.
And this is where he sees like all the worlds that Brainiac has destroyed. And then we get this one 360 shot that's really cool of like Superman standing in the wreckage of the world. And it's like, oh, that's where all the money for this episode went. Uh-huh. This shot.
For one shot.
Yeah. And it's cool. It's a cool shot. So Sal, help me out here. I think the implication is supposed to be Brainiac. Yes. Brainiac was created by Kryptonians.
Yes.
He was a Kryptonian thing. Then he yoinked when Krypton blew up, and then he started destroying... He did not actively destroy Krypton.
No.
He did, however, actively destroy these other planets.
That's right. Yeah, maybe okay. He got the idea. He was inspired. He's like, well, Krypton destroyed itself. That kind of did my work for me. I kind of like that idea. Maybe I'll just do that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay. I think if I were to adapt this in the movie, I would say, like, no, Krypton was, like, planet 50... four of the him doing that. Like, this was yeah. He shows up and he's trying to do it to Earth. Now he's like, I show up, I say, let me give you all this cool stuff. I dick around for about a decade and then I blow up the planet and I get out of here. But that's not this case here. One of my favorite lines is when, like, oh my god, when he's taking over the Earth systems, he's like, Brainiac changed the OS. He put up a firewall and other computer terms we know in
the
90s.
They sure did like to say that. Yeah, they changed the OS and he put up a firewall.
Oh, no.
How much RAM does it have?
It's all the RAM. Too much RAM. So now we get into a Superman fights. Brainiac. He fights Brainiac. Brainiac reveals that he was programmed to preserve and protect knowledge. And Superman's like, yeah, but why destroy the planets? And he's like,
it's easier if you don't make more.
Yeah. He's like, the less people that have it, the more valuable it is.
That's the weird part is like my pitch was just, well, it's frustrating to have to come back or to have to keep like making new data. This was just like, no, it's precious.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, are you going to sell the data to somebody?
No. Sell it? No. These are my collectibles. Yeah, I will never sell them.
You're just like Smaug the dragon sitting on your like booty. Like
I love the idea of Brainiac being like a digital dragon.
Digital dragon. There's stuff here that I think... I don't think this is as clever as the episode thinks it is. However, there are ways to spin it, especially now. We're dealing in an age where it's large language models, but we call it AI.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing, but they've branded it that because of, you know, the cultural cachet of it.
Yep.
But there is an element where we're realizing that the Sam Altmans of the world and the Elon Musks of the world talk about it as if we're going to create digital Jesus. But the problem, what it's more like is a copy of a copy.
Uh-huh.
So it's a shittier, it can do things humans do other than calculating, which computers are good at, but worse. And so this idea of it being, if you were going to do a story like this or even Terminator now, it really should be a programming error.
Yeah.
Like, we told Brainiac, knowledge above everything, and knowledge has inherent value. And he, because we programmed him bad, he took that as like, great, I'm going to suck up everybody's knowledge and then destroy the thing. Like,
yeah.
It's just a programming error that is now his personality.
Yeah, I kind of love that. And like, you could actually go further with that. Like, you start with a programming error and you establish that, like, the more knowledge the Brainiac gets and the more experience he has, the closer to consciousness he becomes.
Mm-hmm,
so, like,
mm-hmm.
We inadvertently created a psychopath. Like, he's where Superman's like, we uploaded the code, we fixed you. Like, you know, you could really hand wavy this, where like Superman talks to his space dad in this Fortress of Solitude, and he's like, oh, Brainiac, yeah, that was a rough, I really screwed that up, but I actually have an updated code. If you want to, like, if you ever run into Brainiac, you can update him with this code that I whipped up.
Yeah.
He uploads the code, and Brainiac's like, I've evolved past that code 10 planets ago.
Yeah.
Like, I am this.
Yeah, well, and I think you touched on something interesting. Like, and this would justify, you know, you're talking about the Man of Steels of it, spending some time on Krypton, where you introduce Jaxxer or one of those other Kryptonian fucks that's not Zod. And he's the guy that programmed Brainiac. And we get everything we got in that first episode, which is Brainiac sucking up all the knowledge and yoinking it. But you realize it's like we meet the guy that programmed Brainiac. And we realize because that guy's a fucking sociopath, Brainiac's a fucking sociopath.
Yes, exactly. That's why it's like, that's why it's such a problem that like the people who are all involved with or excited about AI also seem to like not understand that there needs to be moral safeguards. That like they think that like, that's an antiquated or it's like an arcane concept. And it's like, no, but if it ever did get to a point, right now it's not. It's just like procedurally generated, like replications. It's not intelligence. But if it did achieve intelligence and it was able to computate like the future of us, if it has no moral safeguards, it will do like, it's just like my issues with like business, where I'm like, a business is not a person. Like business is like a corporation's job is to make money. It's legislation's job to push it into a channel that has moral safeguards. Because like a corporate, if you were like, I have this procedurally generated corporation algorithm and it has calculated how it can make the most amount of money, it's going to be like, well, work your workers to death, replace them with robots, and like destroy the environment. It's like, because that's the, because the quickest route is a straight line.
Yep. 100%.
But like we have to remove the, you know, so you have to go around this thing that doesn't also destroy the enjoyment of having money. Like, you know, like
Well, and that's the thing that we've lost. Like, you know, the government, the role of government is to improve the lives of the governed. And we're like, but what if it was run like a business? It's like, no,
that's
businesses run like a business.
We not already have those and they suck.
Everything run, if everything's run like a business, everybody's going to be miserable. Case in point.
What if we ran the weekend? Like we run work. Like,
what are you talking about? Yeah, so it's like you could even say, like, just say the inventor of it is Vril Dox. I know that's the Kaluan name, but it sounds like a Kryptonian name. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
And it's and basically you personify, he's the head of the council and he's the one that invented Brainiac. And then Jor-El has that moment of like, wait, you're downloading your consciousness into Brainiac to leave. He's like, yeah, I don't give a shit about any of this. I'm just, my only goal is to basically make myself as godlike as possible. And so now the thing that leaves that is Brainiac is a combination of those things. And like you said, as he keeps eating up worlds, he changes. But it's always for the worse because he's looking for the wrong things.
Well, and he has like the baseline of like shit. You know, like he's an asshole to begin with. So it's all just going to reinforce his douchebaggery.
Yeah, because let's say he ran across a planet that's full of pacifists. He's like, well, this provides me nothing useful because he doesn't seem peace as valuable.
Yeah.
So he's like, this is useless. And he blows it up. And it's like, wait, peace is good. Why don't you want us to have peace? Anyway, that's not what, there's implications here that are interesting. Brainiac, again, becomes like a huge, like is arguably up there with Darkseid as the big bad of this universe. He becomes a big deal. So
he does. Yeah.
Put a pin in this episode because Brainiac is going to keep coming back. Yeah. Anyway, so Superman punches. Oh, Brainiac has a beam on him. They use this yellow beam that seems to just weaken Superman. I think it should have been red to imply red sunlight, but whatever. That's just that's a quibble. The missiles, because Superman's distracting him, the missiles hit the ship. Superman punches Brainiac's heart out. The whole thing blows up. Superman, I think like Brainiac's last words are, my balls. Superman goes and he only saves the Krypton one, which is kind of bogus. Like you can grab a couple.
They also start like popping. I'm like, oh no. Like that whole planet is dead. Like, do you understand? It's all for nothing. Like even Brainiac destroying the planets. If you don't preserve the history, you're worse than him.
Yeah, it's grab a couple other ones, man, on your way out. Don't just grab Kryptons. Anyway, Lex is basically like, fuck, I'm tired of this shit. And one of his guys are like, oh, there's this little bit of alien code. He's like, we'll deal with that later. Wah, wah, wah. And then Superman takes his orb to the Arctic where he thinks it'll keep it from prying eyes. And this is actually, once again, to go back to my thesis that just do this as your Superman movie, that's a great place to end your Superman movie on. Of like, hey, here's the origin of the Fortress of Solitude. He's now got his Krypton orb. He's going to build a house around it. Like,
yeah,
that's...
I kind of love that. It's very, it's actually kind of very Batman Begins, where it's like, this is where the Batcave is going to go.
Yeah, like it's a good beat. It's a good, very post-crisis origin for the Fortress of Solitude.
Yes.
It's a good way to explain, like, how does he have this hologram of his parents? It works. It just works. And it's just one of those frustrating things of like, just steal this. Why aren't you stealing from this?
You already own it. It's not like you have to pay anyone.
Yeah, just take it. Anyway, so that's our introduction to Brainiac. We got a lot of exciting lighting stuff come.
Oh, the next two.
Next two is, which by the way, it's been a while since I watched this episode. I think you could have combined the Collector and the Brainiac. I think you could have just looped those in together. But whatever, man. We're getting Lobo, baby.
Yes, we're getting the dude from Everybody Loves Raymond as an inspired voice casting for Lobo, who also keeps coming back.
And it's that's another thing. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But this is another thing I like about this show, where they're like, Batman, especially those early episodes, are very in the lane of Batman. Granted, it's Batman. There's a lot to work with. Yep. Superman, even in the first season, they're like, ah, fuck it. What if Lobo was here? You know what I mean? What if Flash shows up? Like, fuck it. Who gives a shit?
Feel them going like, because the first one, they're like, the assignment is make a cartoon show to tie in with the movie.
Yep.
To capitalize on the movie. This show is, we love this universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, the show is an excuse to normalize Jack Kirby's fourth world.
Yep.
Yeah, they're going to be... I mean, like, they friggin' introduced Kyle Rayner as the Green Lantern of this universe. Mm-hmm. Flash gets an episode.
Yep,
like,
yep.
They are like, no, Superman is the way... And it's funny because James Gunn does this, where it's like, no, more than Batman, Superman is the entry point for people to understand what the DC universe is.
Yep, absolutely, 100%. Which is why I still think, like, yeah... The Batman could exist on its own little thing, and we could Superman and loop it in. That's what they did with the animated series. That's how it worked before.
I think the reason why we haven't gotten an official Batman word is because they are just trying to make it, to get the Batman in there. Like, I think that James Gunn wants the Batman.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a question of, like, can we make it work, and how quickly can we integrate it? Like, you know... I think that if Matt Reeves didn't have pressure from James, this is all speculation, but I think if Matt Reeves didn't get any pressure from Warner Brothers, that script would have been another 2 years.
Yeah. And again, like Sal mentioned, I like the Batman. So I love it's the like, Batman. That's fine. You know, take your time or whatever. But I also think, again, I, especially after seeing Superman, I do, you know, there could be merit in doing a Batman that more is aligned with what you guys are doing over there, especially if it's my only way to get a Batman with a Robin,
right?
Then fine. But I'm still a firm believer, like, yeah, let Matt Reeves take 5 years between Batman movies and just have Robert Pattinson be your Batman that hangs out with Superman.
Yeah.
And then let the fans do the work. Is it connected? Is it not connected? Ah.
Who cares? But also, yes, it clearly is, because nothing happens in The Batman that contradicts Guy Gardner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, we're good. We're good. Yeah. Just do it. Why, you know, but why doesn't freaking Robert, like, Falcone such a problem? Why doesn't Batman call Hawkgirl? Like,
yeah. Guess what?
He would never do that anyway.
Have you read the comics? It's always... Why is it... Daredevil, Matt Murdock's in prison. Why doesn't he just get his buddy Captain America to get him out? Whatever. Because that's the story we're telling, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Well, how come Batman got his back broken? Doesn't he know... Didn't Martian Manhunter show up and help him?
Yeah. That's not the story we're telling. And I think the fans will do that work for you. It'll be fine. But... Whatever, gang.
Yeah.
Thank you for everybody joining us live. We had Tea Time join us. He's talking about his frustration with the Kryptonian parent stuff again. We're not going to get into it, Tea Time. I know your stance on it. But thank you for joining us. Thanks for everybody that's a patron. Sal, remind the kids at home where they can find what you're working on.
Most of the time, you can find me over at youtube.com/comicpop or Comic Pop Returns. They both feature videos made by me.
Check them out. Great stuff. I mean, if you're over here, you're probably already checking that shit out. But if you're not, come on, do yourself a favor. Go look at it. You can find me at DJ Talk Trash. Again, you're a patron. You're here. Thank you for being a patron. Thank you for supporting us. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye. It's over.